Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Granville Strategic Royalty Corporation's second quarter 2015 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has difficulties hearing the conference, you may press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that today's discussions may contain forward-looking statements that reflect current views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in the forward-looking statements. For more information on Granville's risks and uncertainties related to these forward-looking statements, please refer to the company's Management Information Circular dated April 16th, 2015, which is available on SEDAR. Today's call is being recorded on August 19th, 2015. I would now like to turn the meeting over to William Tharp, Chief Executive Officer of Granville Strategic Royalty. Please go ahead, Mr. Tharp.
That's great. Thanks, Chris. Good morning, and thank you for participating on today's call. I'm joined today by Steven Perry, our Executive Chairman, and Donika Rawhill, our Chief Financial Officer. I will provide the highlights of the quarter. Donika will then provide a financial review, which will be followed by the Q&A session. Overall, the portfolio performed well as we begin to see the impact of scale. Q2 represents our sixth consecutive quarter of record growth since going public. Revenues of 2.3 million dollars, adjusted EBITDA of 1.5 million net of an impairment provision, and free cash flow of 777,000 dollars. As we see scale, the portfolio, our free cash flow benefits allow us to return capital to shareholders. The board has declared an August dividend of 0.0042, which represents 0.05 per share on an annualized basis. The record date is August 31st, 2015, payable on September 15th, 2015. During the second quarter, we returned just over 1 million dollars in dividends to shareholders paid from free cash flow. It demonstrates that our model is working well. We are building a diversified portfolio of royalty-based and revenue-generating investments in established companies that require an alternative source to conventional equity and debt in order to grow. As our portfolio matures, individual investment outcomes are occurring in a normalized fashion with both wins and losses. Subsequent to the end of the period, we announced our first successful exit. In November of 2013, we invested 1 million in Wmode, a Calgary-based connected device and mobile app technology company. Last month, we agreed to an exit based on the terms of our royalty agreement for a total return of 3.15 million, representing an IRR of approximately 104% and a 3.15 multiple on capital. Within our dividend capability, make new investments from our robust pipeline of prospects and follow-on investments in select portfolio companies. The transaction is a great example of the applicability of our royalty offering. It helps companies achieve their growth objectives while retaining their independence and allows investors to maintain their equity ownership to monetize value at the right time. That's in the win column. On the other side of the ledger, we also recorded an impairment provision of approximately 1 million dollars for default due to a non-payment. We intend to monitor the situation on an ongoing basis to maximize our recoverability. From a broader perspective, our approach has been to construct a diversified portfolio capable of withstanding losses of this nature while generating an overall target portfolio return. That's simply sound investment strategy given our focus in the SME marketplace, which brings with it expectations that not every investment will survive. We continually monitor the credit quality of all of our investments. As the portfolio matures, we're seeing a normalization of risk across the spectrum that one would expect from an SME portfolio, including variability from quarter to quarter. The majority of the portfolio resides in the satisfactory category as of June 30th, with special mention and substandard categories together accounting for approximately 30% of the portfolio, which is within the range we had expected. It is worth noting in this regard that our approach toward the doubtful category, specifically impairments, is to be aggressive and prudent. It's a no-surprise approach that we take. In the case of the one impairment recorded in Q2, we felt it was appropriate to recognize a provision against the entire carrying amount of the investment. As always, we'll continue to monitor the investee and the appropriateness of the impairment provision to ensure the maximum value is recovered. These are examples at the extreme tails of our portfolio, but it's the majority of the investments in the middle of our bell curve that drive the overall performance of our returns. We believe positive exits like WMode will balance and offset impaired assets, allowing us to protect the core return being generated in our growing portfolio while enabling us to maintain our industry-leading IRR. The WMode transaction is a prime example of this trend, position balance in the losses plus the exits account. While there can be no assurance of future performance, our analysis of the portfolio gives us confidence we will remain in positive territory for the remainder of 2015. As also provided for in our first quarter conference call, based on the visibility into our growth rate, the current portfolio, and strengthening deal pipeline, we were and remain very comfortable with the target payout ratio of 80% for the end of 2015. So let's start with the numbers. We made 10 investments during the quarter, or 3.33 per month, consisting of 4 new investments and 6 follow-on investments. We acquired just under $8 million during Q2, a 52% increase from those acquired in Q1, bringing our total since inception to $37.8 million. Since the start of the quarter, advances under loan instruments were approximately $1.6 million, to existing investees, with a current balance today of $1.2 million. We made 3 loans to investees where we determined an additional royalty would be punitive to the underlying business. We do not anticipate that these financial instruments will form a significant part of the portfolio. Our focus is and will remain royalty-based solutions, but being flexible from time to time with an SME portfolio is necessary to help to maintain the long-term value of our investments. Our rolling 3-month investment per month was $2 million for July, which is within our stated range of $2 to $4 million per month, pending available capital. Our rolling 3-month average investment was $730,000 in July. Our key non-IFRS metric, average royalty per million invested, was $253,000 in June, which is well within our target range. On our new investments, which consist of Dove Cleaners, Expert Homes, Manifest, and TrueGolf, these are 4 great companies where we see real value, just like we did in WMode. So let us give you some examples of what attracted us to these specific opportunities. Expert Homes, for example, is a really well-managed distributor of modular homes in Western Canada. It's family-owned and has undergone a successful succession plan from a father to a son, where the new generation has delivered substantial top-line growth back to the business. In the case of TrueGolf, a golf simulation technology company, it's a high-margin business with capacity to drive additional growth as its software product line becomes a larger component within its revenue mix. These are just 2 recent examples of the 25 compelling opportunities that we've uncovered that are looking for growth capital in an alternative form to traditional equity or debt. With nearly $38 million invested to date, the diversity of our portfolio is shaping up well between both the U.S. and Canadian denominated investments, as well as between cyclical, defensive, and neutral risk positions. The opportunity for a royalty-generating investor that targets SMEs outside of resource, pharma, and film is a greenfield marketplace. We are deploying capital in line with internal projections and our non-IFRS measures. To support that growth, we have recruited a new managing director, Annie Terriot, to join the senior team. Annie brings expertise and experience that complements the experience of our existing partners. She brings a wealth of portfolio risk and credit-linked management experience to Grenville, developed through her hedge fund and venture capital experience. In just 2 short months, she's already making valuable contributions to the investment process. I'll now have Donica Rahill, our Chief Financial Officer, provide an overview of our financial results for the quarter. Donica.
Thank you, Bill. In the second quarter, we achieved strong financial results. We recorded revenue of $2.3 million, our highest ever, 4% over the same period last year, driven by the 257% growth in the total aggregate investments. Royalty payment income comprised 88% of the revenue in the period, which was in line with last year. Year-to-date revenue was $3.9 million, up 676% from last year. Reported operating expenses were $882,000 for Q2 2015, compared to $582,000 for the same. Included in this figure is a net foreign exchange loss of $219,859, of which $209,645 related to an unrealized foreign exchange loss. Excluding this, operating expenses came in at approximately $210,000 per month. We manage our business in a highly disciplined manner with minimum operating costs and a focus on profitability. Based upon existing operations, we believe there is significant scale within the business operations to manage additional investments with minimum incremental costs. Looking ahead, we estimate operating expenses to run in the range of $2.2 million and $2.8 million on an annualized basis for the remainder of 2015. We recorded adjusted EBITDA of $455,000 net of the impairment provision Bill referenced, compared to $20,000 in the same period last year. Excluding the impairment, adjusted EBITDA was $1.5 million. Year-to-date, adjusted EBITDA was $1.6 million net of the impairment provision, or $2.6 million excluding the impairment provision. We generated free cash flow of $777,000 for Q2. On a year-to-date basis, free cash flow was $942,000. Management is confident in the ability of the business to generate free cash flow on an ongoing basis. As of June 30, 2015, the loans and the royalty agreements acquired were $37.8 million. Working capital was $22.7 million, and our cash position was $20.4 million. In summary, we have the financial resources to deliver on the growth opportunities in front of us, both in terms of the royalty expansions and new royalty agreements. I now turn it back over to Bill for his closing talk.
Thanks, Donica. It's been a great start to 2015. As we scale our portfolio of quality investments, we remain disciplined. Balance and diversity are key. We've deployed nearly $38 million of capital to date. We currently hold 40 positions consisting of 25 new investments and 15 follow-on investments in a diverse and balanced group of small to medium enterprises. We're taking a no-surprise approach to the performance of these investments, with one impairment provision taken during the quarter and one successful exit subsequent to the end of the period. But it is the bell curve in the middle of our portfolio that will continue to drive sustainable top-line and bottom-line performance. We posted record revenue in Q2 and continue to deliver return to shareholders with more than $1 million returned in the form of dividends during the quarter. Our prospect pipeline is strong, and we have capital on the balance sheet that is ready to be deployed. As we continue to familiarize the capital markets with our business model and deliver on our financial objectives, we believe Grenville will be rewarded with a valuation that reflects our fundamentals, leading returns from a growing portfolio of stable and diversified investments. At this time, we'd now like to take your questions. Operator, please provide instructions and open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Certainly. And at this time, I would just like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. And our first question is from David Quezada with Raymond James. Your line is open.
Thanks. Morning, guys. Maybe just to start off, wondering if you could give us any color on you're mentioning that your pipeline of potential deals looks good. Is there any way that you're trying to weight it specifically going forward, given what you're seeing in the market to you right now?
Yeah, great question, David. You know, in terms of, you know, the macroeconomics between Canada and the U.S., I think if we can tend towards defensives, we have, you know, if you look at the portfolio holdings, we had a lot of small holdings in cyclical companies. Now, they may not be cyclical and correlated. So if we had the portfolio choice, we would sort, and we do sort towards the defensive end of the equation, and probably U.S. dollar. If we're literally seeing an average of about a deal a day right now, we sort through that and try to tend towards the things where we're trying to tighten up the balance on the portfolio.
Okay, great. That's helpful. And then also, now that you've added Dr. Tiro to the team, you actually surpassed what we were looking for in terms of capital deployment this quarter. Is this quarter a reasonable run rate to think of going forward, and how will the addition of a new team member affect that metric?
Yeah, it's interesting, David. Again, great question. I'd say in the last quarter we've been through, it feels like a bit of a metamorphosis in the last quarter, partly focused on the W mode harvest. When we can get a return of 104% on an asset, then internally we have to look at the highest and best use of management time. So that was a fantastic result. We've got other portfolio opportunities like that when you add on just inbound deal flow. So I think, you know, again, you don't want to do the kind of forward-looking statement side of the equation. The number of term sheets we have out and signed today are the highest we've ever had. And that's a function of actually having Annie on board just for the last 6 weeks when the rest of the team was able to focus on 104% IRR. So we're feeling this is our sea legs are getting stronger, and the end of the year we're thinking it's going to be quite an uptick here.
That's great. That's really helpful, guys. Thanks. I'll get back in the queue.
That's great. Thanks, David. Great questions.
The next question is from James Reed with Haywood Securities. Your line is open.
Hey guys, good morning. On the surface, you know, there appears to be a deterioration of credit in the rise of investments classified as substandard. I was just hoping you could give some more color on what this particular definition means to you guys, and what level of these substandard investments do you see as sustainable on a go-forward basis?
Yeah, so James, great question and good morning. So at the core, the portfolio is generating $252,000 at the end of June over the broad base of the portfolio. So the core of the portfolio is performing very well. Companies that have moved into substandard, definitely there's been a shift in that as a percentage of the portfolio, but it's not unexpected for management, particularly with the team you've got here, which is, you know, we've been venture and mezz debt, you know, lenders and investors for 20 years. So this is actually, I think, a comfortable part of the portfolio. And companies will visit the substandard category for a period of time. So let's say, for example, a company is doing a refinancing, and we're waiting for a financing to close of $5 million, pick a number. If they're in that zone and we're waiting for it, during the course of the month, we will categorize them as substandard because there is a risk. If they get that $5 million financing, they will recover back to satisfactory. So there's a certain degree of volatility we would anticipate in the portfolio. So what's also interesting to note is in the tables that you've got in MD&A, there's the value at risk, which is $9.8 million in that kind of, or sorry, for the total of substandard, it's $9 million. If you go to the table below and then look at accounts receivable, the accounts receivable number is low. So a lot of that is just negotiating with the portfolio companies and then taking a prudent approach to measurement. So there's a trend there, but the trend has got a degree of volatility and we're not uncomfortable with it, particularly when the core is growing and at 252,000 per million. Steve, any comments there?
Yeah, also wanted to add some commentary on this bell curve structure that we talk about. In a credit quality analysis, you see things that have moved down market or down in terms of credit quality. What you don't see are the overperformers, the ones that are going and doing actually
correct.
Very well. And those include things like Vited, a very anomalous return. When we look at this, our concern is that the bell curve looks balanced, that the things that are being downgraded for the time being are matched by the things that are either exiting or are doing better than we predict. important to recognize that when you see a 3x exit like we saw in W mode, that is roughly equivalent of three smaller investments being on the downgraded side, where your returns are often, in this case, 3x. So when we look at that balance, we feel very comfortable with the portfolio and the number of companies that are in that lower credit quality.
Yeah. The other thing, James, which I think is, and this is our approach as a management team, is a transparent level of disclosure. So by putting these tables in, what we're trying to do is familiarize the marketplace with what our portfolio looks like and then how it's performing over a period of time. But we're not uncomfortable quite dramatically, I think, out of that zone. And then Steve also referenced the overperformers. We've got some companies in the portfolio on a cash flow basis are doing extraordinarily well, like excitingly well. So again, balance and manage the tails.
Excellent. And then just one quick follow-up. Where do you guys stand on the recovery from APO, and is there a timeline we can expect for you to receive some of that money back?
What I think Donica's got the most recent updates in the dealing this week, but Donica?
Yeah, I mean, Justin, just to give a very, very high-level overview, basically we received a court order so that at this moment of time we've sent that court order to the Alberta Securities Commission requesting them to lift the freezing order on the cash balance that's in the company. You may recall the cash balance is just over $500,000. So, I mean, there's a certain process that needs to go through, but our expectation is that we'll become very how much of that cash balance will be available for us as a recovery.
Perfect. All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, James. Appreciate the questions.
The next question is from Gavin Fairweather with Cormark. Your line is open.
Good morning.
Morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to touch base, follow on that line of questioning just about the substandard. You guys provided some good disclosure, in the quarter about how, you were spending some management time harvesting on the W mode. I was wondering if these companies kind of fall into the substandard bucket, do you find that you're a greater proportion of your time is being spent on those versus business development, and then also, aware that you have to spend time harvesting on opportunities like W mode?
Yeah, great question on that. That's specifically why we brought Annie into the mix, is to keep that, to keep the balance. I think originally as the portfolio was young, it was add to the portfolio and get that that balance moving for you, that diversification moving for you. Now we're at a really exciting point where there's harvesting capabilities. So, I look at it as a shareholder in our company in Grenville. If we can harvest $1 million investments for 3.15x on the other side and do that within a short duration to generate 104% IRR, that's highest and best use of part of the management team. But it doesn't negate the focus on deal flow, on harvesting new deals. And that's where we're at a really interesting crossroads today with the highest number of term sheets and signed term sheets in hand with good quality deals. When you're seeing, plus or minus a deal a day, as you can tell, there's a lot of sorting that takes place as part of that. So we're throwing out more companies today than we ever have and sorting for better quality. But I think that's a great question, Gavin. Thanks. Any other questions?
Yeah, and just so on the ones that are in that substandard bucket, I know typically, your capital is kind of hands off. It's best to leave it with the management teams of the underlying companies in terms of managing their business. But do you find that you're actually, providing some strategic advice into them, and how does that work?
Yeah, I think there's, because we're all entrepreneurs here, we're company builders. And we don't sit on the board, we don't force our agenda onto the structure itself. We're an open door and access to other capital. So we're always willing to help where we can. And if a company's, they've got speed bumps, and SMEs, that's notorious, they're always encountering speed bumps. We're happy to help them wherever we can. Again, managing the deal flow and making sure we hit our numbers and our target set. Steve, any comments on that?
One of the things I'm very proud of in this group is we have quite a high skill level in terms of helping SMEs. We've done this all of our careers. And so there are times when we can be very effective in helping them grow their business or to work on financing and so forth. And we do add that where it's prudent. There's no question when you look at 2 years into this process of Grenville, there are more companies taking more time in that category, but it's well within the range of what we had anticipated, and we're building the team out to accommodate that extra work effort. Bill made a great point, which is when you get down to what work you're going to do in a day, if you can see a way to make a better return for your shareholders by spending time on working on an exit, you're probably going to do that versus doing another deal that day. At the same time, if you look at the dollars per $1 million invested and the absolute consistency we've had in that, it's telling you that our portfolio and our time management is generating the results which we'd hope to accomplish. And that's for us the real key here. If we can maintain that $250,000 number, we're really doing our job, whether it's time into new companies or time into the existing portfolio.
And on the $252,000 for the end of June, our target is 200,000. So we're really at the end of our stretch market here in terms of what we had hoped the portfolio. We're really excited about that aspect of the portfolio, Gavin.
Okay, that's great. Thanks a lot.
Great, thanks, Gavin. Appreciate it.
The next question is from Mark Charbonneau with Laurentian Bank Securities. Your line is open.
Good morning. Aside from a company being in the process of refinancing, what else might qualify an investment as deficient or a deficiency?
Donica, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, again, in general, what it would fall into that category, as we kind of outlined in the financial statements, is if there has been deterioration in the financial condition of the investee, and there may be a possibility of us not being able to collect the investment. So if, for example, as part of any refinancing, if the run up to that refinancing the company is suffering a cash burn, that will be one kind of a substandard in that, you know, being the ability able to make our royalty payment and things like that. So it's that kind of transition, as Bill alluded to, whereby the financial condition has deteriorated, they're looking at this refinancing, and we would classify that as a substandard.
Okay, so like if a cash burn were to increase, then that would make it below satisfactory.
Correct, or if it's a significant cash burn.
All right, and as of today, so it says you've received payments on three of the four investments that were substandard. So as of today, would, you know, that substandard bucket have moved into satisfactory?
No. Let me clarify. Basically, what I want to say is that the ones that the accounts were in past due, we've received three out of four payments. So I just want to make that clarity, that okay. They were. So I mean, one thing I will point out. For the substandard, we mean that they're past due. For a couple of our investments, they're actually current. But the analysis of the three out of the four payments, that is in relation to the accounts which were past due and not necessarily substandard.
Okay. And it looks like you reported gains of $200,000 on revaluing the carrying value of investments. So two were up, one was down. How do you decide when to revalue an investment?
Yeah, I mean, basically, the guidance is provided under IFRS. Because we are classifying our investments as loans and receivables, we have to estimate our cash flows. And basically, if there has been a material revision of the, if we need to materially revise our estimated cash flows, we have to adjust the carrying cost. So what we tend to do is we look at the trend for the last 6 months and or if there's been any modifications in the agreements, which will have an impact in the estimated cash flows going forward. So our estimates, we look at basically historical information to see whether our estimated cash flows going forward need to be changed.
And material would be plus or minus 5%?
Generally, what we tend to do is 10%.
Okay. That's it for me. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Great question.
The next question is from Eric Natal with Sprott Asset Management. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys. Is there any more color you can provide on the impairment provision taken in the quarter?
Yeah, it's the dollar amount is delineated there, Eric. As you know, what we try to do is take a reasonably progressive and aggressive approach to some of these things because they're SME companies. We don't, you know, in this case, we were all, I think, comfortable with taking a provision against it, not dissimilar to an APO scenario. They're in a challenge zone at this point in time. It's not like an APO scenario in terms of but it's that when we see it, when we see kind of something we need to manage through, we just take a very aggressive position on it. It's the company that there may be a recovery on the company. It's still got employees, it's still moving, but they're struggling with one or two financial issues. So we thought there was a reasonableness for taking a provision against that.
And is this a newer vintage royalty agreement?
We can't give specifics on it. We can't give specifics on it, Eric, much like we wouldn't on the prior one. The
company is still operating. It's still working on its business plan.
Yeah.
We don't want to talk too much about the specifics of it.
Effectively, what I would say, Eric, is no surprises at all. You know, it's kind of a normal course one. We've taken a provision against it. They could work their way through it, and we'll help where we can. But from a prudent perspective, we just felt it made sense to take an impairment against it. And again, we may see some type of a recovery, or the entire instrument bounces back into a cash flowing instrument. We like the company. There's one specific financial structure they've got to work their way through.
Just to clarify, I mean, in the thinking behind provisioning is that we don't want to have any surprises. We want to be prudent and aggressive at it, not to provide any surprises. So we try to be ahead in making our provisions.
Yeah.
Okay. So following the first impairment that you took, I guess, 2 quarters ago, you talked about the increase in due diligence and forensic accounting, et cetera. Would this royalty agreement have been made following such improvements in due diligence, or would it be up from prior? You can see where I'm going here, right? Like the stock.
Oh, definitely, Eric.
As everybody is, people are obviously questioning. So
sure.
With the stock down 23% now, what's the biggest misunderstanding that the market is taking right now?
Yeah, I'd like to answer this one. This is really critical. These kinds of what I would call traditional performance-based impairments have always been advertised as part of our portfolio. We've always said there will be some sort of a balance between those things and the things that exit on the upside and positive numbers. This quarter actually represents an improvement in that condition this period today, including W mode, in the condition of the company, and absolutely validates the model. Our concern is that the market is not yet, I think, recognizing that these kinds of impairments are a normal and natural part of a portfolio. If you don't do those, if you don't see those, you're probably not seeing a traditional SME portfolio performing here. So it's much more important to understand the exits equation and how that relates to the dollars per million dollars invested. So when you look at our numbers this quarter, $252,000 per million dollars invested, absolutely on our target, 10 points above our next competitor. We're still well in the numbers of being the leader in the marketplace. Our exits now exceed our losses, and therefore you have a very positive and consistent pattern with what we always thought this portfolio would do. So in our opinion, and we're I would say vehement about this, we're absolutely doing the thing we thought we would be doing here, feeling very comfortable about the numbers. And that's part of the reason for the guidance regarding the rest of 2015. We really do feel like we will be in positive territory for the remainder of 2015, looking at our assessment of the portfolio. And that's what, again, would be numbers in advance of our internal plan and prior advertised approach.
So great question, Eric. Great question, and it's really, we're kind of within the bandwidth in terms of developing and seeing frame out what our bell curve looks like, what the size of the tails look like, and protecting the core at 252, which we're really, really pleased with. And when we state a payout ratio of 80% at Christmas time, we mean that, right? So taking all of the SME variables into place, management thinks that number is highly achievable. That sets the rest of our financial performance in place. And candidly, our company is driven on that basis. But great question, though.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
The next question is from Kwangmun Ashanglo with Spartan Funds Management. Your line is open.
Hi. Morning, guys. I just want to maybe try one more time a follow-up from Eric's question. For the percent of the substandard investments, were any of those made in the past 3 months? I just want to know if anything is falling through cracks here.
No, we can't go into detail to isolate where the kind of what I'd say the vintage of the investments are. I would say, to Eric's question, prior to the APO situation, we've tightened up the process with Annie coming on board with a great set of tools which are very complementary to ours. I'd say the process is even getting better. This is normal course, steady material for us at this point in time. It really feels like it's steady as she goes and strengthening quite substantially.
We're extremely comfortable with our due diligence process and the quality of investments made in the portfolio. This is not about some systemic risk in how we're doing the business. These are results that are very much in line with what we anticipate in an SME portfolio. You're going to have winners and losers, and the bell curve in the middle is what creates return. And if we return $252,000 in the month, we're absolutely hitting our numbers.
Okay. And I suppose if you guys have been tracking this for a while, do you have any history on the percent from that substandard that make it to double or would make it back up to special mention?
Too early to tell.
Yeah, too early to tell. But I would say, on a monthly basis, there can be shifts within that category. Let's say again, somebody with a refinancing, they raise their money, they can move up to, they can recover back to special mention or satisfactory very quickly. And again, what we don't announce there is the companies that are doing very well, right? So again, the other side of the curve, IFRS discloses on that stratified basis. But again, 252 at the core and performing well.
Okay. I know you break it out geographically, but how about Canada specific? So how much exposure in the portfolio is to Western Canada?
I'd say we're... Right. Yeah, we probably got 2-3 deals on the western side of the country. One of them actually is countercyclical to the commodity side of the equation. Our exposure is low. Now, there are companies in North America that are exposed to the energy framework. So we don't really have, and this is one of the things, Annie's got a great quant background, having been with a $10 billion hedge fund, statistical significance within the portfolio yet, but we're getting closer to it, where we can start to run, kind of analysis on correlations between interest rate risk, energy risk, currency risk, things like that. But we're not worried, Western Canadian exposure is not a material concern for us.
All right. And are you guys... I know you've been doing investments at a fair clip. Any chance you guys are going to slow down a bit, maybe take a step back and...
No. No, our stated objective right at the very beginning was 1 to 3 deals per month, 2 to 4 million per month. We're within that zone. We're a little higher this month at 3.3, or the average of 3.33 deals per month. But I'd say the dollar amount may move up a little bit here, the deal velocity roughly within that same zone. And that is a great way to build a really solid portfolio and continually sort the best quality on deal flow.
As Annie has pointed out in sort of portfolio theory, consistent size investments consistently distributed over time are ways in which you take volatility out of portfolios. And so we think our mix is right, we think our pace is right, and we think the results demonstrate that they're right. So it's not a we're very comfortable with how we're running the portfolio today.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Great question, so appreciate it.
And as a reminder, that's star one to ask a question. The next question is from James Gelman with Richardson GMP. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys. I guess just based on how the stock's acted and what you've said in the MD&A here, when you go to the categories, you're saying that the normal traditional bell curve is functioning, but the way the information and materials presented, it seems to be more characterized towards the downside or the left side of the bell curve. We're not getting a great sense of the right side of the bell curve. Are you saying you're not allowed to break out those things that, in your opinion, are above standard, and there could be an above standard category created here or not? That's my first question.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, if you take a look at W mode as a prime example, Jimmy, and a great question, appreciate that. There are companies in the portfolio which are the other end of the bell curve, which are W mode-esque type scenarios, which balance off things that are at that end of the equation. And it also, you know, although it's a value at risk calculation or number, which is the dollar amount in the substandard category, that can move in and out and fluctuate quite dramatically on a monthly basis. And again, that was a snapshot at the end of June.
Maybe another comment. You know, a credit quality analysis is your credit is either good or it's less than good. So you have just in the way that methodology works, you don't really have an overperforming category. In our opinion, the fact that we've also put forward the fact there's been a material exit here is the demonstration of the upper part of the category, Jim. Not questioning your point is well taken. The market clearly has not understood this.
The way it works, the bell curve and the way you guys are presenting it, we're only seeing the middle part of the curve and the left side of the curve. We're seeing nothing on the right side other than what actually occurred with W mode. The core of the portfolio is still tracking and running 250 per million, which is what the model indicates.
Exactly.
Right.
If we were becoming downside biased, you'd watch the $252,000 numbers start to drop pretty dramatically. That's not happening.
Yeah, I think the other thing, Jim, it's Dominic here. The other thing I would add as well is don't forget we had to write up two investments because they were overperforming as well. So they are, you know, indirectly that shows you the positive side of those ones that the overperforming ones that Bill have been talking about.
So are you saying post the quarter, based on what you're saying is running right now, to the extent you could talk about it, the model is still tracking?
Yeah, and the model's been tracking, Jimmy. We're at, we're kind of 30 months into this, and the model is tracking as originally established.
And we've right. put in some guidance there with respect to the rest of 2015, and our anticipated expectation is that the model will continue to be positive in the win-loss category for the remainder of the year.
Yeah, and it's also kind of the continuous disclosure side of the equation. As we move forward on a quarter-by-quarter basis, we're trying to find the appropriate and structures to show to the marketplace to give clear visibility in how the portfolio is performing. The other thing we have on the horizon, Jim, is the fact that we're going into IFRS 9. So the disclosures that we have here, although that's 12, 18, 24 months away, the disclosures, we want to create a format for a continuous disclosure structure for how it's performing. And again, key to us is the dividend. You know, it's maintaining that dividend and a payout ratio within the zone that we think is a reasonable zone.
Okay. I'd like to move on to the loan category, which you guys have identified here. I think there's $1 million or so of loan related to royalties that we provided.
$1 million. The current balance, Jim, is $1.2 million, and during the quarter it was $1.6 million. So there was one part of a loan that went out and came back. So yet, I think we're broadening out our toolkit, and you've got to recognize the table with the team. We've used a lot of different financial tools to ensure that we protect core value. So part of it is just purely opportunistic. And we're also finding that there is occasionally a limitation on a royalty structure. You don't want to burden a structure with a current cash pay instrument. It can impede the debt service ability substantially. substantially in some cases. So there's, you know, you don't want to overweight a company with a royalty structure. And that's why, candidly, where we can have a smaller royalty in a company, we tend toward that direction. But it's also profitable. And the capital that's gone out, it's coming back. You know, and we're building value as part of that.
You don't view it, you view it as a weapon that helps you abate and about what you're doing, as opposed to it's a conflict of what you said you were going to do, and or it doesn't fit with the business plan as initially discussed.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, as we anticipated as the portfolio matured that some companies were going to need different solutions. We're seeing that in some of the companies. It's opportunistic. It's profitable for the company itself. And Jim, we've kind of co-invested in and around some of these companies together. Sometimes you can get warrant coverage ratio equivalents and release a lot of additional value as part of the mix. And again, right now I'd say it's not a substantial part of the portfolio.
And won't be.
Like, it's not like we're we're shifting style here. We're using the appropriate tools in the appropriate place and focusing more and more and more on, you know, we're a royalty based structure.
Part of this is a desire to define how much long dated royalty type capital we have in play in a specific investment, and that's partly involved in portfolio diversification balance. So sometimes we just look at this and go, you know what, we'd rather have money in for 6 months and back out, because that's about the level of investment we want in the company, and we can inspire, you know, a 2 or 3x investment by others to move the company forward with somebody else's capital. That's a fairly common way which you would use something like this.
Can you, but would you then start to break out, you know, the loan quality in the MD&A at some future point then? Is that going to be what you'll do for in terms of disclosure?
Probably won't be in a point at which it's a material number in our portfolio. These are fairly small investments. They're relatively short-term in duration, so it probably doesn't get to that level, my guess.
Okay. And finally, can you know, obviously the currency has been, you know, quite volatile and is moved quite a bit in the last quarter. Can you talk about, you know, we have a substantial amount of U.S. dollar type royalty companies now. Can you just re-clarify or just remind us how you're managing currency adjustments and risks to protect the quality of the distributions? And that's it for me. Thank you.
Yeah, just as outlined as well at the AGM, basically we've taken the position as we continue to make US dollar investments, the position we're taking is there's a hedge there in that when we receive the royalty in US dollars, we sell it, or we would use it to invest in new US dollar investments. So we are not at the moment taking out any derivatives to hedge any U.S. dollar exposure. The position we're taking is that we have a need for U.S. dollars, and we will continue to use the U.S. dollars as new investment forward.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
And again, ladies and gentlemen, that's star then one on your telephone keypad to ask a question. And it appears that we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the call back over to Mr. Tharp.
Well, thank you, everyone, for your support and participation in today's call, and we look forward to talking to you at the end of the third quarter.